watch horror-themed Christmas movies. Krampus, Jack Frost, Santa Slay, you know?
This is a horror movie. People die in this movie. Ho, 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 everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Papa Gisho.
Père Noël. I forget all the other ones. I was trying to think of all the other ones.
Kris Kringle.
When I say Scott Calvin, you say...
Santa Claus.
Such a good movie. Such a good movie indeed. My most watched movie of all time. Indeed, here we are back once again with Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And you know, things, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. You know what that's
depressing.
From?
Depressing. Just like this movie.
Yeah, exactly. This is from Any Given Sunday, but...
thought that was from Santa Claus, too.
Yes, exactly. But no, we had this whole plan for Gus's birthday month, ended up only doing one movie for Gus's birthday month, because life finds a way to get in the way, in that we just never found the time. Things got hectic. We're in the holiday season, meeting up for birthdays and dinners and whatnot, and just being plain old lazy on top of that.
Yeah, that's what it really comes down to, technically. But we are getting to be busy boys, you especially, with personal things going on in a good way. But alas, we will not give up on the Brothers Movie Factory. We do this for fun, for passion, for an outlet, and we just might change. You know, we've been doing this for 4 years, and you know, we got to find what works best for all, and to all a good night. So going forward, you know, you're still going to see us, or not see us. Hey, you'll hear us. Tune in anytime you see us poke up on your notifications, because I know you're all following.
Exactly. And our hope is we'll make a little bit of adjustment to, you know, when we started this, I was working in an office, and Gus was working out, out and about. I would come to your house. It was pretty much scheduled. It was like every Thursday, no matter what. It was like every Thursday or Wednesday, and I would just stop by on the way home. And then it became, I'll come over, you know, this day or this day. It was always coming over after I stopped working at the office. And then after that, got a dog, but it was still the same. It was, you know, I'd find a day that worked and I'd bring the dog with me and all that stuff. And then just COVID occurred and it caused issues to arise with everything else, amongst other things. But then also on top of that, moving, you know, it went from when we started this podcast, I was about 15 minutes from your house, then moved, and I was about 25 minutes from your house, and now, as we sit, depending on traffic, roughly 45 minutes from your house.
Yeah, because I moved.
Yeah, you moved, and I moved. So, distance in terms of scheduling has come up. Obviously, we've been recording online for a very long time, but it was more structured before, where the online format has made it a little harder to structure for us personally.
A little more lackadaisical.
Exactly. Whereas before, it was like, hey, we got to meet up to do this. Now it's, you know, what time works best for you, and just go with that. And so we're going to try something new, I believe, is what we discussed, in that instead of trying to do four every month, trying to focus more on getting two high-quality ones out there. Two high-quality ones, as opposed to rushing three or rushing four, saying we're going to do three or four or three and only getting one done.
Yeah, it's less about the quality, more about the empty promises. Because not just empty promises to the spit listeners, empty promises to ourselves.
Yeah, even my one buddy, Levi, asked me just last night. He said, "Hey, when are you guys doing your end of year stuff?" And I was like, "Oh, we're gonna record tomorrow night. We're gonna record Santa Claus, and then we're gonna record another movie next week." And he's like, "Oh, wait, so you're giving up on Gus's birthday month?" And I was like, "Oh, well, we might have a plan for that in the future." And he's like, "Disappointed." Like, we are too.
Made you feel it, did he?
But yeah, so aiming to do that. We do have two Christmas movies in mind, today's Christmas movie and then next week's Christmas movie. So why don't we go ahead and get into it?
Hey, you know what? Just to put the little bow at the top of that present, last year, in the Brothers Movie Factory, the whole month of November, we didn't post a single episode, not one, in the month of November. And I think we only did two in December last year as well.
I believe that. So, and that was, a lot of that was due to COVID / meeting up with people and doing different things.
I was in school too.
Yes. So. Yes. Yes.
Busy,
yes.
Boy. But alas, Christmas is nigh. So the holiday, I was going to say spooky season.
Holiday spooky season.
Holiday.
We're going to do that one year. We'll watch Christmas movies for Halloween, Halloween movies for Christmas.
Or you watch horror-themed Christmas movies. Krampus, Jack Frost, Santa Sleigh, you know.
This is a horror movie. People die in this movie.
This is true. People die, and, you know, they even make it very aware. Or no, that's a sequel. Where he's like, "Yeah, I see you when you're sleeping. I know when you're awake." He's like, "That's kind of frightening when you think about it."
Yep, a little bit. But indeed, here we are, December, holiday month, joining me, Gus, the brother of Brothers Movie Factory. If you're new by this point, what we do every week, we watch a movie. We then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. That's where we then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched and we play around with it a little bit. Maybe we take the film and imagine what it would look like if it came out today in the modern era. Same film, same story, just modern actors for the modern audience. Or maybe we take animated film and imagine it live, baby, live. Or just have a little bit of fun with it, imagining what it would look like if someone else played a specific character, or someone else specifically directed it, or a different genre, or even, you know, throwing professional wrestlers into it. So here we are, the Brothers Movie Factory, December, and we finally are doing, and that was no joke at the beginning of the show, way back at the beginning of the show, that was no joke when I said that this film may, in fact, be my, and it's not a personal choice, my most watched film of all time. And that is The Santa Claus. Tim Allen's The Santa Claus might be, very well, my most watched film of all time. I came to this conclusion back in summertime, I believe, when Gus asked me if I had to think long and hard, what is the most I've ever seen a specific movie? I believe you said The Goonies would probably be yours.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't. I said, think long and hard. It took you like 2 seconds. You're like, it's probably The Santa Claus.
Yeah, probably. I've watched it four times this year already.
Christ. It's probably The Goonies for me, or it. What else is catching up is actually Dr. No, the James Bond movie.
Yes.
I've watched Dr. No four times this year.
Yeah, same. And so in this household over here, the Ben household, we are very much Christmas movies. Christmas movies start about beginning of November and run all the way up until Christmas. Whereas you just watch whatever all throughout. You don't watch many Christmas movies, at least this year.
I watch whatever, but I do watch my obscure Christmas movies. I watch my Die Hard, my Batman Returns, my Harry Potter, yeah.
Edward Scissorhands.
You know, you got some James Bond movies that are kind of Christmas themed. Honor Majesty's Secret Service takes place during Christmas. Christmas movie. World Is Not Enough, Bond Girl, Christmas Jones, Dr. Christmas Jones. Christmas
came earlier this month, this year. or thought, whenever.
What's he say? Bond just gets done shagging Christmas Jones. He's like, I thought Christmas only came once a year. Yikes.
Got him. So the Santa Claus, it's one that, for whatever reason, and I don't know if, because I honestly, it's funny that I watch it so many times. I do, and it's not my choosing. The wife loves this movie, throws it on just to throw it on. Hell, even I throw it on just to throw it on every now and again. It's more like, you know, she's going to bed, and I'm like, all right, I'll put something on, and hence I throw on The Santa Claus, or I throw on Christmas Vacation, or Home Alone, or The Grinch. You know, we watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the Jim Carrey version, the other night, last weekend, and two nights ago, we laid down in bed, and I put on How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It's just that time of year, and it's more, for me, the reason I think I don't get sick of them, just watching them again and again and again, is the feeling of Christmas. You know, you get older, and things get taken from you, like I said. But you get older, and Christmas begins to not lose its magic, so to speak, but lose its magic. You know, it's not this time of year where you were, like, super, super excited anymore like you were when you were a kid. And so watching these Christmas movies make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside when, you know, the outside, you know, 60 degrees outside and green still.
I know.
And so I think the reason I watch these a lot, and I never get sick of them during the year, even though, you know, I've watched Santa Claus four times, watched Home Alone twice, watched The Grinch twice, watched Christmas Vacation three times, is because of the feelings you get. And I do think what's great about The Santa Claus is, unlike some other Christmas movies that I watch consistently throughout the year, it's really a really fantastic Christmas movie, I think, personally. It's got some excellent acting, and it's got a really cool idea in a plot. And it's also got some questionable parenting, but that's neither here nor there. So with that, let's go ahead and get into The Santa Claus.
Listen, you know, I remember seeing this movie before you were even born.
1994. Yeah.
Came out in 94. I remember seeing this movie. And what am I trying to get at? Well, I'll get to that point. I'll branch off of this. You, in particular, because of Wifey Poo, you watch a lot of Christmas movies, as you mentioned. You have, over the last decade, developed nostalgia for these movies. You have developed, because we, like, for example, Christmas Vacation. You and I did not grow up with Christmas Vacation.
I never watched it until I started dating my wife.
So you now have a history and an association with Christmas Vacation, like The Santa Claus. And I'll get to my point with The Santa Claus here in a little bit. Christmas Vacation. I personally had never seen Christmas Vacation till what, like 3 years ago, or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And I've only seen it twice. You've seen it two plus times a year for the last 10 years.
Generally. Yes.
I saw that one time, and I watched it last year. And, you know, to be honest, and this is sacrilegious rather. Pardon me. I don't want to say I don't really care for Christmas Vacation. It doesn't really do much for me.
You just, like, don't get it.
Yeah, there's a couple jokes. There's a couple jokes I enjoy. I quote it, you know, from time to time. But it's not one I seek out. It's not one I go to every year like a lot of people. Same with like A Christmas Story. I've seen it once in my life. Don't really reach out for that one.
Watch that the other night.
As I mentioned, the more obscure. I do like my traditional Christmas movies. I love It's a Wonderful Life. Home Alone's probably my top 10 favorite movies of all time. Maybe Home Alone 2.
There's something about the beginning of Home Alone when the music starts playing that I'm like, this is Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. And it's honestly in my top 10. And then like Miracle on 34th Street, like those movies, and Muppet's Christmas Carol. But other than that, like, at least off the top of my head, I said, like, the most obscure.
I only seek out the obscure movies. Here's 10.
Edward Scissorhands, you know, and then the ones I mentioned earlier. But like
Tremors.
The Santa Claus. I haven't watched this movie in like 6 years, and it had been a long time before that. And I get warm and fuzzy near the, like, literally the last 15 minutes. The rest of it, I actually feel very depressed watching that movie.
The middle is pretty depressing.
The beginning, the whole first two thirds of the movie is kind of depressing. And we'll get into why, because I feel like we're going to have differing opinions. I will say up front, I do like this movie. As soon as I finished it, I started watching the second one.
Did you get to the part that I mentioned in the second one?
I didn't get to it quite yet. I had to go watch Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man.
Bring me pictures of Spider-Man. Bring me pictures of Santa Claus.
Because, you know, we're seeing the Thanksgiving movie. Now we're seeing the new Spider-Man very soon, so I wanted to finish up my marathon.
Bernard pops in. He's like, Bernard, I knew you were working for him.
Yeah. What if J.K. Simmons was Bernard? Wait, what?
What if J.K. Simmons was Santa Claus?
Yeah, what if he was Santa Claus and Ted Raimi was Bernard? That would make more sense.
Look at him go louder!
So,
I'm upset.
I don't even know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's from Whiplash.
Oh. Okay.
He's like yelling at him. He's like, I'm upset. He's like, louder!
I gotcha. Thank Mark.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie I find to be depressing. We'll get into it. We'll talk about why I feel that way as we go along, because it's gonna not be a clash, but you're gonna give your opinion and I'll give my opinion.
Yeah, so the movie, for those of you who don't know, it has a fairly basic premise and family drama premise, whereas the father and the mother are divorced. The father works for a toy company, Scott Calvin, played by Tim Allen, and he's like a super successful toy businessman, but he is very lacking in the, you know, father figure approach. He's not there, probably why the family split up. And he is meant to spend Christmas Eve with his son, but he was busy at a Christmas party. And, you know, you get very early on a feel for his character, that he's very selfish and he's kind of a liar. And he doesn't really care. I mean, very right off the bat, they introduce him and his coworker who worked on this really successful do-it-all-for-you dolly, really successful toy. And his coworker goes to accept it, and she starts talking, and he takes the mic from her and starts talking over her. So you see he's selfish. Then he's on leaving a message for his ex-wife, who's on their way to drop off their son, Charlie. And he's saying like, oh, you wouldn't believe the traffic out here, but there's no one there. And he's beeping and yelling at people, but no one's there. So you get an early idea for his character. And that he's not, he's a very selfish person, very selfish and not precisely there for his son.
He's a piece of shit to the layperson.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And then you kind of get the family dynamic, too, where, you know, when he gets there, the son isn't that exciting to be there.
Excited
to be there. And, you know, he also notices there aren't a lot of presents under the tree. And that's when we get basically the inciting conflict of the film. Because prior to that, there's really no conflict in terms between his ex-wife and him. You know, she comes in, they seem fairly civil with each other, minus he doesn't like her new boyfriend Neil.
Her husband Neil,
and who's a psychologist. He's a doctor. It's really that moment where he's like, there's not a lot of presents under the tree. And he's like, of course there aren't presents. It's for Santa to bring them. And it kind of gets brought up that he doesn't believe in Santa anymore because Neil and his mom told Charlie that Santa isn't real. And he's like, well,
Santa's more of a feeling.
Yeah. If we're going to destroy our son's delusions, maybe I should be a part of it. But Yeah, so it's that's kind of the inciting incident, so to speak. But yeah, it's set up very early that he's not a good person, but he does still hold Christmas in high regard. He still thinks that Christmas is important and that it should be, you know, taken care of. But you see that he doesn't really know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to be a dad or a proper dad. You know, he tries to cook dinner and burns dinner. They end up going to Denny's, an American institution. You know, all sorts of things. But yeah. Early on, what are your feelings in the movie? You said very depressing.
So, yes, Scott Calvin, the character, he goes through quite the arc, clearly. Starts off, as you mentioned, very absent father. Doesn't care. And they get pretty quick into, like, the spirit of Christmas. He doesn't really represent it. Doesn't have any decorations, doesn't have any presents, doesn't, you know, just the traditional stuff. Isn't really there with it. And he's there with his son, Charlie. And, you know, you get the vibe that he cares for his son, I suppose. But at least to this point, you really can't. I don't know. It just feels like the relationship isn't there, as in, I mean, that's part of the
point. I think part of that is from the fact that he isn't there a lot of the time.
Exactly. And that is the point. It just makes it very depressing to watch. I feel like this movie should be a rated R drama directed by Scorsese.
One of the best lines in the movie that I quote a lot, as does wife, is whenever we go somewhere and they're like, oh, we're out of that, or like, oh, we're out of that, but plain milk's fine. That's a great line to quote.
Yeah, you know.
Just the other night, she's like, she was like, I kind of want tacos. I'm like, oh, we don't have any beef. And she's like, oh, plain milk's fine.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good line to quote.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like that, like, it doesn't make you feel good. He takes his poor little, like, 6-year-old son out to his Christmas dinner is at a fucking Denny's, which Denny's is pretty good.
It's an American institution.
You know, everything they go to order, they don't have that, don't have that, don't have that.
Good thing they have apple pie. We did.
You know, thank God for Tim Allen, because his delivery is great.
Yeah, he makes the character more likable. If it was an asshole, if it was J.K. Simmons, you wouldn't like it. You'd be scared.
And, you know, yeah, Tim Allen makes this movie, and I don't want to say this movie made Tim Allen, because he was
a household name.
Yeah, by this point. So he, at this point, was very famous doing the very big hit show Home Improvement. And when it came time to make the Christmas Claus, Christ all holy mighty.
Jeez.
The Santa.
What the hell happened here?
The Santa Claus. They wrote the role with Bill Murray in mind.
Oh, God. And that would have been depressing. He would have been mean.
they made that movie. It's called Scrooge.
Yeah, exactly.
Scrooge, duh. Then when he turned it down, they turned to Chevy Chase, and he actually was busy. I don't know if he had scheduling conflicts. He just said he was busy. So, Tim Allen.
Robin Williams would have been good in this role. They didn't try him?
No. Tim Allen was the third choice. And this is a factoid I was kind of surprised by. Wasn't aware of it, anyway. Disney initially didn't want Tim Allen.
Because of his checkered past?
Because of his checkered past. I wasn't aware he had one.
When he was, it's like when cocaine, he was right?
Yeah, when he was in his 20s, he got arrested for having over a pound of cocaine, and he was part of like this like drug ring, and he spent some time in prison for it back in like the late 70s. So here we are, almost 20 years later.
Like, do drugs, you might become Santa Claus.
You'll feel like it anyway.
Yeah.
I think he even has a line about that. He's like,
"Yeah, it's okay. I lived through the '60s.
You're floating, Dad." So yes, he had this big hit show for a few years prior to this movie, so he got the role. And, you know, it's amazing. Talk about, like, best week of your life kind of thing. When The Santa Claus came out that week, The Santa Claus was number one at the box office. Home Improvement was the number one show. And that same weekend, Tim Allen released a book that he wrote, and it was number one. So he was like the biggest star in the world at that time.
Yeah. Success.
Across three different mediums kind of thing. He was very successful. So, and then, yeah, in the 90s, early 2000s, there was a big Tim Allen boom, hot commodity kind of thing. You don't really see him around too much anymore.
He was in that show Last Man Standing fairly recently.
Yeah, you know what? That was a super popular show as well, and it got canceled. Did it get picked up again?
It got picked up by someone else.
Yeah, different studio. Yeah. Which is bizarre they canceled that show. I never watched it, but
neither of us are even well-versed in politics at all. I know that it was very political in some semblance or something. So maybe that's, I don't know.
You know, Tim Allen does have a very vague connection to us. Very vague. Oh, as boy. In, not at all.
Yeah.
But his
he
current
shook
wife,
hands with our sister's brother's cousin. We don't have a sister.
Kind of like that. His wife is from Oil City.
Huh.
And not too long ago, like a couple years ago, he came to visit that town with his wife, visiting family, and ate like a bunch of local restaurants, and it was like, holy shit, Tim Allen's here. But anywho, so yeah, when this movie came out that wasn't meant for him, has become, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, other than Toy Story, probably his signature movie role.
More than Wild Hogs?
More than Wild Hogs, or Joe somebody.
Yeah, probably. I mean, he is Santa Claus. Like, when he becomes Santa Claus later in the film, he looks, like, perfect for the role.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get to that stuff later. He's so sarcastic and cold and just, like, almost borderline offensive at the beginning of this movie. By the end, when he is Santa, he's so warm and welcoming and has all the characteristics of Santa while still retaining his Scott Calvin personality,
yes.
You know? But yeah, like up to the point we're talking in the movie, like I personally don't feel good, you know? And then
it's for the redemption arc.
Yeah, vengeance.
Yeah.
What proceeds is, you know, he's trying to convince his son that Santa's real. But he himself doesn't believe it. And, yeah, what happens that night? Old Santa Claus is up on his roof. Arose such a clatter, woke them all up, and he's like, hey, buddy! And inadvertently kills Santa Claus.
Yes. Which, that's the one thing where I'm always like, no one talks about that. Like, even all the elves are like, yay, he died. I'm like, what kind of bastard was he?
Maybe he was the Bill Goldberg Santa that killed people.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is like he slips off the roof, dies from the fall. And they do it rather G in that he just kind of disappears and his little glove waves goodbye and stuff. And so it's nice. It's a fun death. But
fun for the whole family.
Yeah, but it's good in that you see throughout this scene you see this relationship that wasn't there grow between him and his son, just purely built on the Santa Claus moment of Santa slipping off. He told Charlie to stay inside, his son. Charlie comes outside, you know, you got him. What does he say? You killed him.
Yeah, he said you got him.
Yeah, you got him. And then he says, that's not Santa Claus. And he's like, well, he was, because he killed him. But you get to see this moment of them, you know, kind of becoming a pair that they weren't before. Charlie goes up on the roof. There is that great moment. I like when people rework some Santa Claus lore, so to speak. And the Arose Such a Clatter Ladder Company is really good. Moment of there's a ladder that says Arose Such a Clatter. That's good stuff. They get up on the roof, there's the reindeer, and basically there's a card, identification, business card that says Santa Claus. If something should happen to me, put on the coat, the reindeer will know what to do. And in doing so, he becomes Santa Claus through the Santa Claus, such as a clause in a contract. And I think, while, you know, you can say what you will, I think that is an ingenious plot device. And that, you know, how does one become Santa? Or how does Santa live forever? Or does, you know, what is it? And so throughout the movies, you find that there has been many Santa Clauses, especially mostly in the third movie, you see a lot of that. But it does beg that question of, like, how long is someone Santa? And they dive into that, and I kind of like that, that tidbit of lore and how things go and everything like that is fun. But you do see this relationship build between them, because you have this young boy who wasn't believing in magic anymore, but now is seeing it, and his dad is going from this person that he barely knows to becoming his hero. You see that all in this early scene, and it's very, very fun to watch, and there's a lot of fun hijinks to it as well.
Which leads me to the next depressing part of this movie, which I do find to be very interesting to see conceptually. I'm just saying, it didn't make me feel the greatest. That's why I said this movie should have been rated R and directed by Martin Scorsese. But what a big chunk of this movie is what takes place throughout the next year.
Yes.
Between Christmas Day to Christmas Eve the following year. And how Scott Calvin is slowly turning into Santa Claus, waking up, gaining weight, slowly growing a beard to the point where if he shaves, it just grows back instantly. He is becoming Santa Claus, not just in appearance, but also in just
feeling, knowledge. I mean, he knows who's good and bad.
Mannerisms, like all of a sudden he has a craving for sweets and cookies and things like that. So that's all fun, and it's fun to watch. But what's depressing is the psychological, not damage, because we know better as the audience, but for the other characters, like the mother character or Neil, the psychiatrist, who's the new father figure, you know. Charlie is so obsessed with Santa Claus and is so convinced that his father is Santa Claus, which, as far as the story is saying, is true, but society doesn't deem that as sane.
Yes.
So it's getting to the point where, like, they're worried for Charlie's well-being. They are concerned about Scott Calvin raising Charlie in this way, because he's not being supportive of everyone's thoughts, because he himself is physically changing into Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh,
he's changing his physical appearance so Charlie likes him. That's what they think he's doing.
Exactly. And it's not healthy, and it's wrong to them. So then there's, like, things like court cases and, like, loss of custody. I told
him everything, Dad.
Like, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
You even, son of a bitch,
even
you
teaches
broke our
his
promise.
Son how to lie.
Yeah. I'm just like, ah.
This how's five bucks sound?
Yeah. I feel like shit watching this movie. And, like, I once again do think it's a good movie. This is the one I go to a lot because I'm just like, eh. I almost feel icky until the very end. And I actually get a little welled up, a little what do you call it? A little lump in the throat, and we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, the beginning part, he's an asshole to the people in his life, including a son. The second part is like the breakdown of a family even further, and the perceptively breaking down of a child's psyche, I guess.
Kind of, although there are a lot of good points throughout, and why, you can still believe in Santa Claus and different things like that. And that, like, you know, have you ever seen a reindeer fly? No. Or yes. Well, I haven't. Have you ever seen $1 million? No. Just because you don't never seen something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There's a lot of good moments like that throughout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seeing isn't believing. Believing is seeing.
That's a good line. One to take with you in your back pocket, just like milk is fine.
Milk is fine.
And even Scott Calvin, when he's just trying to get his kid to go to bed and he's asking a billion questions, this is top of the movie. He says, like, sometimes believing in something just means believing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, believe in what? How's the words go? Believe in what?
Your heart is saying. Feel the melody that's playing.
Yeah.
That's where it always gets kind of weird to me, because I'm like, there's a billion things he could do. I've kind of thought about this through my watches. I'm sure you sat there and you're like, why doesn't he just shave his beard now and then show people that it grows back? Or why doesn't he dye his hair and then show people that it's dyed? And it kind of, I don't necessarily, you know, obviously he probably could do that, but they, like Bernard, for example, you know, I'm skipping here a little bit, but Bernard doesn't show up in front of other people, like in front of Neil and the mom. He doesn't show up in front of them until they finally realize that Scott is Santa. They finally believe. And I think that's part of it is you know, that I at least in my head, or the way I make it okay, is that, you know, the reason he doesn't just tell people what's happening is because he's not supposed to. You're supposed to believe. Even in the second movie, which maybe we'll talk about in the future, there's a young girl character. And throughout the movie, multiple times, she asks if he's Santa Claus. And he always denies it. And at the very end of the movie, he finally reveals that he's Santa Claus, because, like, she just wholeheartedly believes that he's Santa Claus.
Yeah, but without logic, it makes you wonder, because they clearly don't, like, put that out there. But with that logic that you chose to make yourself feel better, what if, yeah, he shaves his beard, it instantly grows back magically. What if he's like, look, and he shaves his beard because, like, these are, like, magic rules?
Yeah, it doesn't do it.
What if it doesn't do it because they don't believe it, and then therefore it wouldn't happen? Then he looked crazy.
Yes.
They should have thrown that something like that in this movie. Maybe. That's just to appease.
Again, it's like a kid movie. It's a kid's movie. A kid watches this. They're not thinking that. You know?
No. I know I didn't. I vividly remember the very first time I saw this movie.
I grew up with Santa Claus too. So not this movie so much.
I remember when I was a kid, the coolest thing that I had ever seen in my life as a 4-year-old was the ELFS, the elves.
Elves of Attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. Like, who are you? Like, don't worry, we're the good guys. I was like, holy fuck, they're cool.
I want to be that. Elves with attitude. We're your worst nightmare. Tie them up with tinsel. I always just kind of come to that conclusion. But there's so many. I mean, I get the depression side of things. But a thing that makes this movie a pretty legit kids movie is, you know, and we'll touch base on the end here in a second, but is all the acting. I don't think there's a single poor actor in this film. Whereas in the second one, there's a lot of bad acting. And in the third one, there's even more bad acting. But the first movie, I mean, everyone is really, really good. Especially Tim Allen, and especially the actor that plays Charlie. He's not in a lot. And I was telling you that he is in the sequel, and he's phenomenal in the sequel. Eric Lloyd is his name. But Wendy Crewson as Laura, the mom. David Krumholtz as Bernard, the head elf, and Judge Reinhold, and all the actors.
Isn't the actor who plays Bernard, isn't he Spider-Man now in the multiverse or metaverse or fuck Spider-Verse? Cripes.
I don't think so.
He's not. I just looked it up.
I was going to say, he's not in much, to be honest. But he is good in that show, or in that movie rather. as every, like I said, everyone in that movie is really, really good. That kind of makes the movie even better because it's just, it's higher quality. For being a kid's movie, it just comes across as much higher quality, where the sequels have maybe less in terms of directing power, less in terms of acting power, and it causes them to falter a little bit.
I was thinking of actor Jake Johnson, who is Peter Parker in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the animated movie. And if you look at, if you look at those two actors, if you're not very familiar with them, they look the same.
Yeah.
That's why I made that mistake. But anyway. Gotcha. The kid, I was blown away, to be honest. Like, I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. And you in particular, not so much me, but you in particular, you're very critical of kid actors. I'd say 12 years of age and younger. Because there are some that, there's a lot more than most are
shit. They suck.
But this kid, this child performance was very, very good. Very good. Whereas in the sequel, you got Spencer Breslin, who was like in fucking everything at that time. He was awful in the sequel.
Yeah.
Overacts.
I don't like when, that's my biggest thing, is when kids overact.
I would put, I'm also drinking spiked eggnog, kids. As I sit and I'm thinking with a foggy brain, I'd put this kid, what'd you say his name was? Eric Lloyd?
Eric Lloyd.
I'd put his performance as Charlie in my top five child performances.
Hey, this motherfucker is Batman.
In what?
Batman and Robin. He's young Bruce Wayne.
Holy shit, is he?
Yeah, he's the one that runs down the hall and falls.
Oh, that one shot.
Yeah, that's Eric Lloyd. I saw he had a credit, and I'm like, huh? And I clicked it, and it said he was Batman. I'm like, what? And so I typed in Eric Lloyd Batman, and it's that picture. And I zoomed in. I'm like, yep, that's him.
So he makes the Santa Claus like, listen, kid, you're gonna be a star now. You're gonna be in the Joel Schumacher Batman movie. You don't even see his face. He like fucking falls down. That's it.
Yeah.
That's funny. But yeah, you know, me personally, not to get into child actors, but, you know, I'd put Henry Thomas from E.T. as my number one. What's his name? Shit. Haley Joel Osment from Sixth Sense. You know, just to name two. But yeah, he was really good. Really good. And that this role is the kind of role that could, like, even though Tim Allen's so great and he's clearly the star, having a improper actor play Charlie could have broke this movie.
Yeah. If he was annoying, because some of the ways he plays the character.
What if you didn't have Eric Lloyd? What if you had Jake Lloyd?
Yeah. He'd be annoying with his delivery. Not to pile on Jake Lloyd. I actually love him as Anakin Skywalker, which I know a lot of people don't.
You love him as Jamie.
I don't. That's what I was going to get at. Because I just watched Jingle All the Way the other night, which is such a fun movie. I don't care what anyone says. It's a shit show of a film.
If you started explaining the beginning of Jingle All the Way and the beginning of the Santa Claus, almost the same movie.
You're my number one customer.
Absent father, too busy with work.
Yeah.
Fucks up during the holidays.
Oh, the doll. Yeah, the doll. Says it's turbo time, but movie's great. It is a shit show of a film, but it's so good.
I'd rather watch that.
This is a bomb. Thousands of these come through the mail every week, and I kept one. It's a great movie, but Jake Lloyd, I know she's like backing up into stuff and stuff. She wants to play, but Jake Lloyd, his delivery is always his issue. And At least that I think that's the biggest criticism. And I, like I said, I think his portrayal of Anakin is just great. I enjoy his Anakin. I don't care what anyone says. But it's the delivery. That's usually what people say. So, for example, when he in the movie Jingle All the Way, he'll be like, "Wow, I did it! Did you see it, Mom? Did you?" He doesn't like have any emotion, and he does that in Star Wars as well. You know, whoa, or like, you know, yippee! Like his delivery is very monotone and a little off, and doesn't sound natural. Eric Lloyd
reciting lines,
Eric Lloyd sounded like he was natural, like he actually believed the things he was saying. You know, and he sounded like a real kid. "You never do what I want to do," and he sounded upset.
"How come all the things I want to do are stupid?"
Yeah, or "The plain milk's fine." Yeah, you know,
he's
"How
really
come
great.
You guys always fight?" He's really good throughout, and he's I'm telling you, he has a phenomenal scene 8 years later in The Santa Claus 2. And so while he's definitely, you know, I do think that it makes a difference between, you know, having an actor to support you, a child actor to support you in that role that can deliver the lines appropriately and do well versus an actor who maybe is a poor, you know, if it's that Breslin kid from the second one that's just awful, the movie's not as good at all. Because there becomes an aspect of it that becomes slightly unwatchable. Like I said, with Santa Claus 2, I can't stand what's his first name? Breslin?
Spencer.
Spencer Breslin's performance in that movie is not good. And part of that is his delivery. Another part is the directing choices. I don't necessarily understand throughout, like, his character and why he's even necessary, slash a lot of things. But so that leads me to not like a portion of this film. And now the middle part of the Santa Claus, I love. I think the mid part of the Santa Claus is some of the best Christmas stuff. I even said there's a scene in The Santa Claus that I think is one of my favorite Christmas movie scenes of all time. It's a phenomenal scene.
Santa Claus 2?
Santa Claus 2, yes. But because of, most specifically, his character, and his portrayal and his acting, I don't like the movie as much. Same would go for this. I'm sure if that actor was insufferable as the kid, as Charlie, I would have not liked this movie as much. And so the talent is out in spades in this film, and that's what makes it very good and very fun. I do want to talk a little bit about the end of the movie, being, you know, kind of coming to the realization of, you know, that he is actually Santa Claus. I like all of that. I never really got why he does kidnap Charlie at the end of the day.
Technically, yes.
Yeah,
which just adds stress to me as a viewer.
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense why, you know, he probably could have explained it there, but again, all part of the plan, I guess. But he does kidnap Charlie, basically, and they go back to the North Pole, and they're getting ready, and everything's going that way to get ready for Christmas, but meanwhile, the cops are looking for him. They're chasing down Santa Claus. They're getting all these other mall Santas and bringing them in for questioning, looking for Scott Calvin. And they eventually catch him at Neil and Laura's house, the mom and the stepdad house. And they can't find Charlie still and all this stuff. And that's when your elves with attitudes get deployed to bust him out of jail because he's being held in jail. But that moment toward the end, where you see Neil believe and you see Laura believe, and they know that he is actually Santa Claus, is really, really a great moment and very good acting. I mean, again, Judge Reinhold, when he's like, "Laura, he's sucking us into his delusions." It's really good. Like, he's just trying to hold on to what he knows as a psychologist. And Laura realizing that everything he said was real, and that he is actually Santa Claus, and that, you know, what they did wasn't okay, that they tried to take Charlie away from him, even though he was telling the truth, and everything like that. And you get this feeling that, you know, things are gonna be okay. And the movie ends really great with Charlie and Scott flying away in the sleigh, and Laura yelling after him, like, Scott, not over any oceans. Scott, Santa! And it's playing that great theme throughout. I love the theme in this movie. It's very simple, but it's very Christmassy and not profound is a little too much, but very...
That ZZ Top song.
Yes, exactly.
Give me all your love and...
Sharp... Or no, yeah, it's not Sharp Dressman. But, no, the theme's the... it's super simple, but it's really effective, and I really do enjoy the theme. But, I mean, ultimately, throughout, I think the movie encapsulates a good story. While you might find some form or some semblance of depression or things that add a little anxiety to you, the end result, it is a very happy ending. It's an incredibly happy ending. And you even said, you know, you got even a little choked up or felt warm and fuzzy at the very end. And ultimately, is that not a good thing? You know, if it makes it a more interesting Christmas movie. Because you can have these Christmas movies that make you feel warm and fuzzy throughout the entire film, but at the end of the day, that's all you got from it. Whereas this movie can supply you with different feelings and ranges of emotion throughout. You know, you might be laughing, but also cringing a little bit, or being like, oh, worried or nervous, but also you ultimately get this happy ending, very similar to something like Miracle on 34th Street, that can make you feel a lot of different things throughout the viewing of that film.
Yeah.
And that makes it more dynamic and more unique. And that's why I think this movie is a special Christmas movie. It's not your run of the beside, no matter what the cover of the film, because the cover of the film looks slightly generic. This movie is definitely a classic, in my opinion. I think it's a classic Christmas movie to be held very in high regard with other films. While the sequels maybe diminish it, you don't necessarily look at Home Alone 1 and 2 and say, oh, I can't watch the Home Alone movies. They're not as classic anymore because 3 and 4 and Home Sweet Home Alone are awful films. You just enjoy those first two. And the same can be said for this, where the third one, yes, is not a good movie. I will give it that.
It's not so awful either.
Yeah, and the second one has some very high redeeming qualities, like mm-hmm. that scene that I mentioned that I want you to watch here soon, so you can be like, yeah, that was...
I thought you were talking Home Alone.
No. I'm talking about Santa Claus now. But Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause, it's a neat idea. It's super short, though. It's like, I want to say it's like an hour and 20 minutes long. It's very, very short. Yikes. And its idea is really neat. Like, all of them have neat ideas, right? Mm-hmm. But the first one has the coolest of how does someone become Santa Claus? You know, the sequel introduces the Mrs. Claus, where you have to be married within, 8 years and have a Mrs. Claus, or you can't be Santa anymore, which they don't really dive into, but it's kind of a fun rule. And then the third one is what happens if you don't want to be Santa anymore? How do you get out of it? And it's called the Escape Clause. And so there's a lot of fun ideas and thoughts, but they didn't necessarily put the time and effort into the sequels that they did in this first one. And this first one has it all. And I think it's a very great, fun Christmas movie to be watched by children and adults alike. And it's really enjoyable.
I disagree with you. The Santa Claus poster cover is not generic.
Of him laying there?
With his, but he's like Tim Allen, but he's got the big gut. He's like in the big pajamas, you know? It's like, what's happening to me? I'm becoming Santa. I think that one's good. The sequel, Santa Claus 2, that's a generic cover. It's just like his face as Santa. Like, okay. Anyway. I have not seen the third one. You, before we even decided to talk about the Santa Claus, a couple weeks ago, you told me about the plot of the third one. And we're not going to get into the plot fully, but you explained it to me. I'm like, yeah, that does sound like a good idea. But I can imagine why it wasn't good. The sequel.
Very rushed and short.
You know, it's funny about the sequel. I told you yesterday before recording that I finished the first movie. I started watching the second one. And you're like, you said what I was already thinking, because I wasn't very far into it. You're like, you know, that movie, horrible beginning, but has a really good middle and a good ending. And I was in the beginning. I'm like, this movie sucks. And after I got off the phone with you, I'm still watching. I got like into the middle. I'm like, actually, you know what? It's getting kind of good.
Yeah, the middle is really good. It's fun.
Yeah. So
the third one on paper sounds like it should be phenomenal. Like he in the third one, Mrs. Claus, her family is she misses her family and she's homesick, and obviously them being, you know, up in the north and they have to be there for Christmas. They can't go and visit, and she can't go and visit because she has to help. And so they basically get her family, her parents, to come to the North Pole and convince them that it's like Minnesota or something. I forget what they convince them that the North Pole is actually, you know, this place is their factory and all this stuff, and that, you know, Scott runs it, et cetera, et cetera. But because she's been here and hasn't seen her family in so long, that her parents don't like Scott. They hate Scott. They think he's keeping her from them. And there's all this tension between them, and they're fighting. And she doesn't want to be there anymore, almost, and she's upset. And so he decides that he's going to make the sacrifice and not be Santa Claus anymore. And so he gets forced into it. There's some trickery played by Jack Frost, who is the villain of the movie, played by Martin Short. But he gets tricked, and the movie does a time jump, which is really cool. It's a cool idea. He goes back in time, and it goes back to the moment when he knocks the Santa Claus off the roof and puts on the jacket. But instead of him putting on the jacket, Jack Frost puts on the jacket. And Jack Frost becomes Santa Claus, and he doesn't. And then he goes back to present day, and there's all these issues. Like, because he never became Santa, Charlie is a juvenile delinquent. Doesn't listen to his mom. Hates his dad. Laura and Neil are divorced. They're no longer together. Their daughter that they had together hates Scott and doesn't like Neil, and all these things, and so you see that, like, him being Santa Claus was more important. It's a very wonderful life aspect, and it's really cool. It sucks. It's such a cool idea on paper, and part of that is the acting and the directing and the execution. The idea, though, is really neat, but it just doesn't play out that way.
Yeah, yeah, I felt that way when you were explaining it to me. And, you know, that's ultimately what it comes down to, is the direction of it, the script, the dialogue, the storyboarding, like, what does the audience get to see, and the acting. And all that is really good in The Santa Claus. That's what makes it a Christmas classic. Do I consider it a Christmas classic? Yes, I do. Do I watch it every year? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Will I watch it every year from here on out? No. But having discussed it tonight, I definitely respect it a little bit more. Like, see, I guess, with eyes unclouded by hate, you know, can see what they're really trying to do here. And I guess I can appreciate it more. I've been watching it since 1994, literally, and not consistently. But, it's not one I'll watch every year, but maybe, just maybe, going forward, I'll watch it a little bit more. And the scene that does get me choked up is when he delivers the presents to his ex-wife and Neil. The mystery date game.
Oscar and the Meyer weenie whistle.
Yeah, that like puts a little lump in my throat.
That's why you're going to love the Santa Claus 2. That gift exchange scene is so good and so heartwarming and so what Christmas is about. And I'm like, you just need to look up that scene on YouTube. If anyone's looking for something to like see a good moment of Christmas joy, watch the scene. You probably type in the Secret Santa scene, Santa Claus 2. And it's such a fun, cool idea for a scene. And very, very heartwarming. And a neat idea of how Christmas can bring everyone together.
It's what Christmas is all about. Vengeance. I mean, the gifts.
Yeah, the presents. Take it back there and fix it and bring it back here. yeah. That's it, Comet. He does do
that. Of course
that.
They threw them.
Yeah. It's a great film. And I think with that, all our piece has been said, and it's time to get into the factory of this week.
Indeed. What if we took The Santa Claus, starring Tim Allen, who at the time was known for Home Improvement, a television sitcom? What if, kind of like The Santa Claus, what if instead of Tim Allen, television sitcom star, put on the Santa Claus suit, what if another television sitcom star put on that suit? What if someone else played A. Scott Calvin?
Are we doing the 90s? I did want to ask that.
No, all time.
All time, any sitcom? Okay.
I'll probably end up...
You want 90s. Jerry!
Like, what's the deal with the red? Why do you have to wear red? I'm wearing headphones, so I can't even hear myself. Do I sound like Jerry Seinfeld?
No.
What's the deal with the red?
You sound like you're trying to like yell, but keep it down. Like, what's the deal with red?
Why am I wearing red? Yeah, I don't do a good impression of him.
you know who I think would be a fun one? Would be John Goodman, who is in Roseanne. He's still in Roseanne nowadays. And I believe now it's called the
last name of the family.
Yeah, the Connors. I have never watched any Roseanne. It's been on in the background because, as you know from the podcast, the dog barks, and so I have an antenna up here, so I turn it on, and it's always on this one. I think it's called like Laugh or something like that. It's like one of those standard generic whatever antenna ones, and it just shows old sitcoms. Like, it'll show like Third Rock from the Sun, and it'll show The Nanny and Roseanne, old episodes of that. So I've seen it on in the background. That's why I'm like, he's in it. He comes to mind. It's because it's on at some point, usually most nights, to keep the dog from barking. Just have TV playing. John Goodman is Santa. He'd be fun. But he'd already be fat. Not anymore, but...
Yeah. Got John Goodman now, but playing back then. But he's not Charlie's dad. He's Charlie's grandfather.
Yeah. John Goodman. I'm trying to think of other sitcoms, because we used to watch so many sitcoms, especially at Grandma's house.
Of course.
Because she had TBS.
What about the guy who played the main dude in Yes, Dear?
Yeah, I was just thinking of Yes, Dear. Or his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
I don't remember any... I want to go back and watch that show and see if it was funny.
I mean, like most sitcoms, are they funny?
I don't know.
Some are. Like, I get a good laugh at Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
I get a good laugh at some Seinfeld.
What about Ray Romano?
That's a show I watch a lot that I don't actually think is funny.
But it's enjoyable.
I watched King of Queens, an episode recently. I'm like, this isn't funny either.
Used to watch that a lot, too.
What was I going to say? But my pick. What if we went with a slightly older, later season? Go Jaleel White. We go Steve Urkel.
Yeah.
Kill Santa Claus. Did I do that?
No, that don't do that to him. He doesn't want to be remembered as that.
Well, this is at the time. So, 90s. That was it. He was the thing. He could, it would have taken Santa Claus and put a spin on it.
I'm going to go with a show that I've been watching more. And I think it would be funny. I don't know if you've ever seen any of this person. the show, but Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David as Santa Claus.
Unfortunately, the only Larry David I've ever seen is in The Three Stooges, where he played a nun.
Oh, nice. Now, Larry David, he's always, like, immensely inconvenienced by everything, but he always has good points. You'd be like, wait, is that a good point? But it's also, like, semi-offensive. He might be a fun one. A fun Santa Claus. Larry David's Santa Claus.
Oh, I got that beat. I got that beat. Let me find the proper name, and then
Newman. Newman was a star. We could get Wayne Knight in there.
Hell yeah. How about all right? How about Stuart Penkin?
Stuart,
who played Earl Sinclair in the show Dinosaurs.
I don't know.
The dad dinosaur in the show.
No, you know what would probably happen, to be like 100% honest? The it'd Rock.
It'd be Tim Allen.
The Rock from the show Young Rock.
Oh, like nowadays?
Yeah. The Rock as Santa Claus could probably happen.
So could, you know, Red Foreman as Santa Claus.
I just don't know if I could watch The Rock be like a quote unquote Santa Claus and be like, yeah, I can't see him being a dick.
he would just be a heel character.
He was already the Tooth Fairy or the Molinator to the more informed.
Yeah, maybe Roy. We recast him to that part.
He's the Tooth Fairy.
Molinator.
The Molinator. I like it.
You have seen this movie too much.
I've seen them all. Now I'll go with my top two picks would be Larry David, or honestly, probably go you know who'd be great? You'd be great, and I'd be torn between the three of them, but John Stamos.
Ooh.
John Uncle Jesse. Sexy Santa Claus.
Yeah, he'd be sexy.
Yeah, John Stamos. But I also, you know, you look at that and you're like, Bob Saget, but you'd also be like, could he be a dick? He was always the nice parent. John Stamos could probably pass as, like, being self-absorbed.
Have you witnessed it?
I've seen his actual stand-up. Yeah, I'm saying, like, Full House Bob Saget, though.
Exactly.
Where, like, John Stamos, Jesse, Uncle Jesse, he could be a little self-absorbed.
Yeah, he could. He could.
That's or Dave Coulet.
Listen, these aren't bad picks. These aren't bad picks.
I just the wife was just actually watching through Full House, and I haven't watched through that show in a long time. And we watched from like Michelle was walking around and having a much more prominent role. That's about where we got. So we got several seasons in. Yeah. And I was like, this show is amazing. Like, it's so good.
You get to, at the end of each episode, the slow music kicks in. You get a life lesson.
Yeah. I'm like, this
a lot
is
of shows
great.
At the time.
Yeah, but
a sitcom you guys should go back through and enjoy, and I'm not saying this for our Santa pick. We could find one, but it's Boy Meets World. Mm-hmm. That show's great, too.
The sister-in-law, when she was a little younger, she was watching Girl Meets World. And I caught an episode or two of that, and I was like, this is kind of neat, because, you know, what's his name? The main kid, Corey?
Corey, who's
he's basically
Ben
Savage. Yeah, he's basically Mr. Feeny in that show.
Yeah.
Which I was like, this is kind of neat. And they brought back, like, Topanga's character and his friend. I forget his friend's name.
Hunter,
he's in an episode or he's in a couple episodes. I'm like, this is a neat idea. Same like Fuller House, but yeah, now John Stamos is my pick.
You know, John Stamos is fine. I said Hunter. Is that the character's name?
I believe so. I believe that's the Hunter is his name.
I'm going to go.
Invader was his dad.
I wouldn't agree with you that I was going for Julia White, but you took my words and gave them a meaning. When you're like, he doesn't want to be known for that, as Steve Urkel. So, yeah, why don't we get Stamos cozy in here?
Uncle Jesse Santa Claus. Now, it'd be good stuff. All right, so that's what we'll do. Imagine a John Stamos Christmas. Good. So there we have it. That is the Santa Claus. Anything else before we go?
Okay. So take a second, look deep in your heart. You've said you've seen the Santa Claus the most. You've seen Christmas Vacation probably the second most. I'm talking holiday season here. Which holiday Christmas movie have you seen the third most?
The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. It's funny that it is my, it was like the bane of my existence as a child. I was actually terrified of it. And then probably around seventh, eighth grade, I found this like new appreciation for it. And I loved it. And I watch it every year. And while the wife does not like it, she's not a big Jim Carrey person. We still watch it multiple times. Like I said, I've watched it twice this year.
You're not a big Home Alone person either, and you guys still watch it.
Yeah, she watches the ones that she knows she doesn't necessarily like, but she knows they're good. They are good movies. And so we still watch those ones. But yeah, I would say
What do you see as a budding Christmas, like, regular for you guys? One that you haven't, like, previously, like, we'll say the last year or two, you haven't been watching every year. What's one that's a budding one that, you know what, we're probably going to watch this every year?
It would be The Christmas Chronicles on Netflix. It was a Netflix original. It came out, I believe, 3 years ago. But since then, we've watched it every year. I think it's a really cool idea for a movie. If you haven't watched it, I recommend it. And Kurt Russell as Santa, he's a really good Santa. The idea of the movie is pretty cool. Kids, this girl's dad passed away. The brother is getting into crime. The mom has to work on Christmas, and so she's stuck with her brother that kind of bullies her. And she kind of is looking through old footage and catches a glimpse of what she thinks is Santa Claus. And she convinces her brother to stay up with her and see if they can catch Santa Claus. And they ultimately hitch a ride on his sleigh, and he loses his sack of presents, and he has to get all his presents and his reindeer back. And there's a lot of other holiday hijinks involved and some neat stuff. And the first one is really good. Second one's okay. It's got some bad acting in it. And it's got the Mecha Godzilla kid in it, and I don't like that. But Kurt Russell's great. Goldie Hawn's in the second one. She's really good. So yeah, it's a fun one. We've watched that every year since it came out. I've enjoyed it. Whereas like Netflix or Disney Plus released Noel, which was Anna Kendrick's movie. And I mean, while I can see us watching that again here soon, I don't really care for it.
I thought you were gonna say Gremlins.
Claire watched it for the first time this year. She had never seen it before. And so, yeah, she watched it for the first time this year and was heart set on saying it wasn't a Christmas movie, but learned quickly it is.
Can't deny it. You can't deny it. It says Gremlins and there's snow falling on the ground.
That, there literally starts with, like, the song's like, Christmas, the snow falling down.
Yeah. I gotta have me one of them Gremlins for my kid for Christmas.
Yeah.
Like this isn't a Christmas movie.
I mean, what's his name? Corey Feldman's character is selling Christmas trees. Like, it's very much a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas. It's got maybe not a Christmassy message, but it's this Christmas. It's more Christmas than Die Hard, and Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Tune in to Brothers Movie Factory episodes of Die Hard and Gremlins. Yeah. One for me that over the last, I would say, 3 years has been a budding Christmas classic and constant is a movie, an anime. We like to tout anime. And you've never seen this, and I would like for you to see it sometime. It is called Tokyo Godfathers. It's from the director of anime films such as Perfect Blue and Paprika, which we also have reviewed on the show.
Oh, Paprika.
Yes, indeed. It's about three homeless individuals in Tokyo, a old washed up has-been gentleman who's homeless, a transgender who has had a checkered past, homeless person, and a teenager on the run, homeless person. They each come across this baby on Christmas Eve, and they see it as a Christmas miracle, as a symbol of possible redemption. And they spend Christmas Eve trying to return this lost baby to the child's parent. And it turns into this, you know, it's funny. It'll make you laugh. It could make you cry. It'll make you stressed out. It's a beautiful movie. Great message. It's very adult. Not like, it's rated R. We'll just say that. A lot of language and adult themes. But it has an amazing ending and great characters. And it's just a unique concept. And we've been watching it every Christmas, or, you know, our Christmas that the lady and I do for a few years now. And I see that as like a budding Christmas classic for us.
Yeah. Well, good indeed. Now you just need to watch actual Christmas movies, not your obscure Christmas movies.
Yeah. And it's an obscure Christmas movie. So.
But, it's always good to find some movies that you watch every year. You know, for me, that's something that happens quite frequently. I watch certain movies at certain times of the year, and that's just the way it is. But with that being said, you about ready to wrap her up?
Wrap her up like a Christmas present.
Indeed. So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post the show to first, and subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, hey, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and posting what we'll be watching, which next week we'll be watching Home Alone. So stay tuned. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook. You find us there. We won't be looking different, like we're becoming Santa Claus or something else. We're still the Brothers Movie Factory. Click on it, like us, share what we post. I like to make memes for watching each and every week, and include links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers.